What is between the ones and zeros? It's a space where data meets leadership, where culture and analytics collide, where traditional ideas of performance, leadership, and decision-making are challenged. The podcast isn't just about theory. It's about real leadership, real data, and real impact. Moving beyond the fluff, merging analytics and the human side of leadership. This is Between the Ones and Zeros.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Between the Ones and the Zeros, where leadership meets technology and we dive right into that messy, meaningful space in between. I'm your host, Anthony Piccolo, founder of Performance Scoring, accountability enthusiast and champion of leaders who know it's not just about the numbers, but the people behind them. Here, we're all about helping leaders measure what matters, make better decisions, and still keep it real, especially in this age of AI.
Hello, everybody. I'm Dr. Chichi, leadership coach, consultant, author, and mom of two, proud mom of two. Paula Gould Williams is our guest today, and I have no words to describe Paula. Paula is a national treasure. She was the former CEO of CPS Energy. She's a true force in transformation and impact. Beyond the title, she's also a mentor. She's been a mentor for me. She's highly influenced the way I lead. And she has been a force in my life for good. She's given me courage. She's given me wisdom and clarity. Mm. And I'm thrilled to share her story with you today.
I'm so excited, Paula, that you're here with us today. We know you've been at the helm during times of massive change, especially as technology and now AI reshape what it means to lead. Paula's been known for her ability to keep people at the center of it all. You just heard Chichi talk about it. And even as the world speeds up, we're thrilled to have her join us to talk about leadership, resilience, and how the rise of AI is changing the way leaders show up for their teams and communities.
So, Paula, I have known you for, what, over 16 years? You have been a godsend for me, to my life. So can you introduce yourself so our audience get a little bit of the goodness that I've had the pleasure of enjoying for the last over 16 years?
Well, I would be glad to, Chichi. Yes, we have known each other for, golly, I hadn't counted 16 years, but it seems like it's been a wonderful, challenging, but very, very educational journey for us in our friendship, which by far, I can talk a bit about my background, but for me, it means a lot to me that I do have relationships that have spanned years and they continue even beyond our ability to be able to work together every single day. I am actually a San Antonio native, born and raised here, born on the east side of San Antonio. My dad served in the military proudly in the Air Force, but my mom was from a community outside of Seguin. And she said there was no way she was going to go back to where he came from, which was New York City. We had to settle back in Texas. So while I was able to travel around the world, different places, Okinawa, Alaska was considered actually a foreign overseas assignment. Most of my life was here in San Antonio, and I went to school here. I got an associate's degree from Alamo Community College District. I didn't know what I was going to do. It was in fine arts. I wasn't sure what my life was going to be. But then I got a transfer scholarship to St. Mary's University and decided to take accounting as an elective. Non-committal I was. My father actually told me, be careful about choosing accounting because you got to balance to the penny. So I was pretty apprehensive. But all that said, I became an accountant. I ended up over time becoming certified. And the thing I always loved about accounting is that everything was in balance. Theoretically, it made sense to me. The beauty of it is I've done accounting and looked at books from across the world. Debits and credits pretty much mean the same thing. I mean, they may have a different language interpreter, but the mm-hmm. but the weight of it is the same. So I've been able to learn different industries and businesses over my years. As an accountant, I focused on SEC companies. I always joke that I used to specialize in photo finishing, when in fact that was an industry when you used to like drop your little film off in a kiosk. That goes away. But I've done other things. I've done banking. I've done communications, theater, just different aspects, and cable. I spent quite a bit of time in cable and in that industry. And then I got recruited. And Chi-Chi, this is where we ultimately met. I got recruited to come into the utility industry as a controller. And I would tell you that I didn't know anything about the utility industry, but I learned a lot, both technically as well as a lot about people and what motivates not only the people that you work with every day, but what motivates customers and stakeholders and all those things that happen over your career. I served CPS Energy from being the controller up to being executive vice president, and had different types of responsibilities over administration and finance and IT. And then ultimately, I got a chance to become the CEO. That's a whole journey in itself. Not sure we'll get to that today, but if we ever do, I'd be glad to explain it. But it was mostly about the ability to just keep learning. Yeah. And trying to improve myself and trying to help others around me. And ultimately, I served as CEO for about 6 years. Wow. And I would say that now what I decided back in 2022 was that I had been working long enough. I tell everyone I'm about 105 in executive years. They accelerate you very fast. And at that point in time, I decided to retire. I no longer work as an executive. Now I serve on boards, and it is my absolute pleasure to help other companies and management teams guide and navigate through the complexities of many things that are thrown at them today. And I love doing that. And I still love mentoring and watching people that I've known over time just keep growing and growing and growing. And it's an honor for me to be here today to talk to you, Anthony, and of course to get a little bit of time, Dr. Chi-Chi, and kind of talk about leadership and kind of where it has taken me and where I think I can give a little insight about what others can think of as they're going through their own professional journeys.
Oh, that's awesome! That's awesome. Well,
Just one person.
Yeah.
From fine art to CEO of a utility organization.
Oh, wow.
Leadership, like life, is not a straight line. And like you don't necessarily know where you're going to end up, or where you started is not where you're going to end up. Given that, what does leadership mean to you?
You know, interestingly, I'm going to talk a little bit kind of qualitatively about it, because I do think about it quite a bit.
Yeah.
Oftentimes, I think most of us think about leadership in terms of this progressive position, and ultimately you become some executive or you become the CEO and you are leading, and that is leadership. I basically believe, though, that you think and you can be a leader at any level in your organization, at any position in your career. Technically, it's about guiding people, motivating them, inspiring them, and empowering them. And so, of course, you want to be able to, like, as an individual contributor, you want to be able to lead yourself, right? To think about things that are mission-driven, always thinking about doing the right thing, getting things done, making sure that people believe in you. And so you're leading by example, probably right. More so when you're an individual contributor. And then when you become like a supervisor, you're trying to help everyone and lead them in a process, but you're probably doing it kind of as a supervisor, you're looking at a finite set of processes, or it's something that you can really see, but you're still helping and lead those individuals. As a manager, you're probably looking at a much more complex set of maybe multiple processes that you're responsible for. But again, it's not just you setting the example, but you're trying to empower all of those people who work with you, your coworkers, your colleagues, to really execute at the highest level.
Yeah.
And then again, as you progress through the executive ranks, you're really thinking about leadership in terms of also helping to build that culture.
Right.
That allows people to feel like, again, you give them some guidance to help them. You give them enough tools. You make sure they're not running into barriers. And you're trying to inspire them, again, to make the best decisions that they can for themselves, for their families, and for the customers that they're serving. And then, again, empowering them in the right way. So those are those primary tenets of guiding, inspiring, and empowering that I think is really important in leadership. And again, to think about it not as it's something that you cut on and off,
right,
but it's something that you're living in throughout your career, in the day, in the moment. But ultimately, you want to be able to look back on it and say, every time I did something in terms of my career, I chose to lead in a way that either does it by example or explicit or implied or a gift to someone.
Oh, that's all. And as we talk through this, Paul, and one, thank you so much again for being here. I'm already just so grateful for the time that you've given us and our listeners. But in this frame of leadership, I can talk about this from my journey, you know, as a leader. I'm not going to get to a final destination. It's kind of an evolving thing for me as a leader. And I know your career has spanned industries and roles and levels of leadership or levels of management. And the first part of this question is like, how have you seen your leadership evolve? And then what's one of the biggest challenges you see, like just kind of contexting your leadership evolution with some of the challenges you think maybe today's leaders are facing?
Great question. And one that I think you should always kind of pose to yourself as you're going through your own career. I would say as I started out my career, again, decades ago, way too many, now that I'm thinking about it, like more than four decades ago, when my career started, I really thought about it in terms of getting better and better and excellence. And I remember asking, for example, when I was a staff accountant before I got my CPA and I was trying to understand the industry, and I asked my supervisor, you know, when will I feel like I know what I'm doing and feel like it's in the right way? When you're a staff accountant, you're given, again, very specific things to do. You don't necessarily see the entire picture. And I remember feeling like there was more to understand conceptually about how a business runs and whether or not we've done a good job in the audit. And, you know, he gave me these very basic response, but, you know, it was prophetic in a way. He goes, well, you'll know when you know.
Did you ever know?
Yeah. And ultimately, as I, you know, kept thinking about it, I also thought about it in terms of, Anthony, to your point, like it's a destination. I'll know what I know, and then everything will be clear to me, and I'll be able to move forward, and I'll have conquered something. But in reality, the world is constantly moving, right? And the work environment is constantly moving, and people and their skills and abilities are moving. And so there's, to your point, there is no perfect destination. And you have to really kind of create this resiliency about your own view on work.
Yeah.
It isn't something that you absolutely conquer and you never have to worry about it again. Let me give you an additional dimension. When I first got the CPS Energy, and Chi-Chi, I don't know if this happened to you a lot, but I would have people say, golly, last year was so difficult and tough. I'm glad we got through it. Now everything should be smooth and we shouldn't have any issues. And I don't want any more years like that. And it was a concept, right? That you would have a phase of difficulty, and then all of a sudden it would get smooth. And those really difficult years would only pop up, every 5 years, you hoped, It was like leap year. You wouldn't see it every year. And there would be no February 29th. And of course, only in February, that year with February 29th, that would be the difficult year. But in reality, what I have learned over time is that, again, you're there to contribute, and you're there to be resilient, and you're there to help the people around you be resilient and creative and find that energy to really keep looking at one challenge after the next, because that's actually what work is.
That's right.
Conquering one challenge after the next, and it won't always present itself in the exact same way. It's going to be different. But it's those people who look at it like, okay, this is another team opportunity. This is a team opportunity. I have to bring my skills and abilities as an individual, but I also realize that I'm going to be much better as a team because everybody brings their individual skills and abilities. Yeah. So for me, being able to grow from this belief that there's a if there's a perfect environment and a perfect way to get things done, to a one that actually in reality gives me creativity, gives me excitement, gives me the challenges, the motivation, and let me take that challenge and make it an opportunity to do something good for a customer, good for any of the stakeholders that really are looking for something from our organization. Consistency of service, prompt responses, all that stuff. Again, it needs and it takes someone being attentive to it and caring enough about it, and then not being overwhelmed by the fact that, oh my God, I got another challenge for the day.
Stupid.
The world has even changed a ton since I came out of management from 2022, Anthony, to today. And it for example, I want to talk about AI, but even Less. Before we get to AI, I want to
say, before we get there, there's something that you said that is important for our listeners to understand. We are constantly looking for note problems. But if we really reframe it, and if we really take a step back, and you said it in many words now, problem is a gift that allows us to become innovative and creative.
That's right.
So we need to get to a point where we start reframing problems to opportunity.
Absolutely.
Opportunity to grow, opportunity to innovate, opportunity to collaborate, because no one person knows it all, right? And until you're faced with a problem, you really don't realize that you need somebody else to accomplish what you need to do. And Ms. Paula, if you can look back in all everything that has happened to you, those problems end up being a blessing in disguise. If you never had to go through them, the product wouldn't have been what it was, or you wouldn't be who you are today.
I mean, you're absolutely right. I mean, actually, when you get into certain levels of executive leadership, you're actually psychoanalyzed a lot. And so I've done my share of different, testing for emotional intelligence and actual intelligence and all that. And the one thing that was almost surprising for me was I do have a tendency to look at a challenge as an opportunity. And but it reminded me that not everyone has that. But I would say it's not that everyone doesn't have it. I think it's a matter of whether you embrace it. Again, to your point,
reframing,
changing your mentality of saying, oh, wow, this is a new challenge. What am I going to do? Am I going to let it defeat me, or are we going to persevere with it? Right. So I didn't at the time when I really was executing it, in an organization, I really didn't think about it as reframing. I thought of it as something I had to do.
Yeah.
But I will say as a letter, as a point of recommendation to others, as you've put it out there, the ability of an individual to teach themselves to reframe the problem statement in a way that motivates them is such a gift and such an ability and something to be practiced over and over and over again.
Somebody once told me, and it's a hard thing to do, but because we're all sitting, you know, where our feet are and we're looking on the, you know, at whatever your elevation is. I'm at 635 feet today, right? But it's hard to look down at myself and watch myself think about the thing that I'm actively doing. This self-awareness to get outside of yourself and try to view the person of, like in my case, me, objectively. And because like in the moment, it's subjective. I'm sitting here. It's my problem, right? It takes real effort to get outside yourself and look down with an objective view, because we take our history, our experience, and we see the world that way. And we, a lot of people, and I'm going to say this about myself, I think it's, you know, I can make an assumption that people see the world that I do. They see the, because I love issues and challenges. You know, problems are, you know, problems is kind of a like a four-letter word. You know, it's because again, just the word defines how you think about the thing, right? And you know, that's why we're saying, well, I see a problem as an opportunity, or using the word that we call it, how we define it to ourselves really impacts and affects how we view whatever that is, just by the word itself. And this is where I want to I think I might be skipping ahead into the AI stuff, but this is where I really think, Paula, that AI in particular is having just such profound effects in how we lead others, how we see our own leadership affected in others. Because for the first time now, people have something that, for better or worse, they're trusting to help them focus the world. Whatever that is, the challenge, the issue, the project, right? And now I'm using this inanimate thing to help me focus my gaze. And that can be very dangerous, but it can also be very effective if wielded appropriately. And so I want to like pivot all the way back to kind of where we got into the challenge part of this conversation. What are you seeing, given your illustrious history of, like, you know, rising and moving from industry to industry, role to role? Where are you seeing some of the biggest challenges for leaders today? And this is I know AI is like a big bucket, but where are you seeing that from your vantage point?
You know, it's a great question. I'm going to pick a couple of threads out of what you said.
Perfect.
To get there. Your comment about being able to see yourself objectively and kind of lift yourself out of the moment and look around and think about how you're going to manage through it and how you perceive and what can be done qualitatively. I think that's a huge statement, because it is very hard to look at yourself objectively. Almost impossible. Yeah. And you hear people say that even when you look in a mirror, that there's a distortion, because a mirror isn't necessarily how people see you.
Yes.
One-dimensional, two-dimensional view. People see you in 3D, and then some universes 4D, right?
Yeah.
And so the multiverse. People see you so differently. And so the thing I love about that statement as well is when you let yourself think about that, right? How are you looked at, and how are you looked as a leader, and how can you manage through it? The other thing that makes me step through this is the ability to assume that you could be wrong about something.
Yes.
You can come up with a thought and an idea, and you can move ahead, and it could be a great plan, but you could actually be wrong about it, right? And one of the hardest things, and I think, and in some way, I think today, I'm a little concerned, because I think it's even more acute. It is hard for people to take criticism.
Yes.
Preach. It is one of the most difficult things, right, is to take criticism. And In reality, I mean, like one of the, I mean, I had a boss that gave me so much constructive criticism.
I know the boss.
we're changing the word. We're calling it feedback now.
I have to say it was
this was above feedback.
it was above feedback, right? And in many ways, when I was getting it, I just felt, you know, I felt inadequate. I felt picked on. I felt it was unfair. And then all of a sudden, I really realized that I was like over fixating on myself and feeling defensive. And then when you really think about what fills your head at that point, you really realize you're not working. You're obsessing.
That's
you're
right.
You're actually falling behind. You actually become the self-fulfilling thing that makes things worse.
Prophecy.
Yes.
And then you become part of the problem because you're not focused on what the real problem is. Your feelings are hurt, and so you're focused on the feeling instead of the execution of what needed to get done.
Right.
And I would tell you that was one of the hardest, again, long stories to go through for me to really realize that I was feeling sorry for myself. The revelation I had is my boss has given me quite a bit of quality feedback. And I came home, I felt bad, and I was like, I can't believe this, and I'm getting this feedback and on, and I was getting these reports, these psychological reports about the things that I do and the way I work. And I asked my husband to read it. And God bless him, right? He read them, and he didn't say to me, oh, you're so right, and those are mean people, and you should just quit, and you need to go someplace else where you're appreciated, right? He actually looked at the report, and he goes,
My wife and I have done the same thing, by the way.
That means she loves you, right? Yeah. And that she's brave, and my husband was very brave. And when he told me that, he goes, Paula, look, there's truth in that report. Maybe it's not 100% true, but right. There's truth. And really and truly, maybe you're 90% great, but that 10% can be your Achilles heel. That 10% can be your launch into self-pity and wallowing and blockages and all those other things that could happen. And so I sat there, and I also had a coach at the time, and he went, yeah. But what he said to me was, he said, what are you going to do about it? He goes, assume it's true. And even it's a perception, it's the perception of how people see you. So what are you going to do about it?
Yeah.
So
that brings it full circle, though, to leadership. Back to leadership. Leadership, if you really distill it, is about self-honesty. Because if you look at what you just said and what you're saying is hard to look down at yourself. It's only hard because we're not honest with ourselves. And Miss Paula, the minute you started being honest with yourself, because you now shared it with people you trusted.
Right.
And they came to remotely the same thing. So if we as leaders can choose to be honest with ourselves and look at this thing, that you're honest doesn't mean you're going to change it, right? That I did this because I was annoyed or I'm mean. I don't like this person, so I'm being mean. But that's honesty. At least you know. And you're seeing yourself truly, right?
Right.
So when somebody else reflects, you don't cringe because that's what you were given. And you were aware of
that's
what you
right.
were given.
Right.
So the question the coach asks you is the most beautiful question.
Yeah.
You have this mirror, you're seeing there's a smudge. Do you want it there or you want to remove it? It's up to you.
Right. To your point, the real reason why that is so important, ultimately, Anthony, back to your second part of your question, is, again, the work and the world and the environment around you is constantly changing. Yeah. And your ability to think about, again, taking yourself and your sensitivity out of it and learning from it. I mean, you can choose not to do anything about it, but you still know, right? Yeah. But you're going to figure out a path to manage it, right? Maybe you'll lessen what people see so they think they can see other things in the execution, and then you focus on the execution again. Okay, thanks for the feedback. Got it. I'm going to do something about it. Let's move forward. And in reality, that's what happened for me is I took it. I embraced it. I realized there was probably certain things I really couldn't change about myself fully, but there were things that I could. right? And they didn't, they weren't going to be the things that held me back. I needed to find the things that were really going to make me more effective. Because even still, if let's say somebody gives you really tough feedback that is difficult, again, go back to the original point of you need to execute. And so how do I better execute? How do I take the feedback that I got, right? That I'm too detailed, right? Or I didn't check the checker. I didn't set up a system to check the checker, right? Whatever that is, you got to still do something about it and you got to take action. And the reason why it's so, so important now is because we have nothing but challenges and the environment is not going to be consistent. It's very hard for us to forecast, for example, what will next year bring?
Yes.
We used to be able to, and people would get gauged by that, right? We're going to forecast, even financially, what our next year's results will be. And if we got off within 2 or 3%, people would say, why were we off 2 or 3%? That's ridiculous. No, now today, if you're 5% off, you're actually kind of close in comparison to all the things that really can happen and all the things that come at you as an industry. We embraced it in the utility industry years ago. We used to call it disruption because we had invested in all of these assets to produce power that lasted 30, 40, 50, 60 years. So you didn't think that you had to take a power plant out of commission before it naturally retired. But then what happened? Disruption happened. And so people like, I don't want power from coal.
Solar, wind.
I want it quote unquote from clean energy sources. And we had to figure out a way to optimize the assets we had, but bring in new technology. And the industry sped up so fast in comparison to what people thought was going to happen. We also used to talk about this thing called the IoT of things.
Internet of things, yep.
Right? And we thought, again, I mean, because we were thinking that every single device in the world, and it, you know, in some ways it is today, but every single device in the world was going to be absolutely connected and integrated and it was seamless and we would have universal ability to have open architecture and everybody would plug in a particular way. And in reality, it was much more complicated than that. That interoperability that people thought was going to be natural, harder to do. The challenges that happened when people started utilizing systems to infect them and cybersecurity threats, that became an issue. So there was nothing's linear.
That's right. In fact,
it really is like an environment of IoT of things. You got to look at every single type of connection and you got to think about the benefits and risks. And the way that AI is coming into that now, in my opinion, is that it is a great opportunity to do great things, but it's also weighed with the risk that happens when people don't use it for good. And so, you know, I basically am just trying to say that the environment becomes so complex that a good leader actually learns how to solve within a complex, ever-changing environment. And again, once again, helps drive that. They're encouraging their teams to work through it. They're making sure they're inspired to really still get the objectives done. They're giving the right amount of empowerment, all within a world where it can shift and change over time, being seconds or years.
You know, it's so funny. I'm in the artificial intelligence space. We built this application that uses AI and we try to help leaders lead better with better data, better information. And, you know, I always talk about AI. It's kind of like a knife. You know, it's great when you know how to wield it and you need to cut your tomatoes. It's really bad if you don't know how to wield it and you get walking around and you drop it on your foot, you know. It really is, no pun intended, a double-edged sword. I don't talk about knives, but it really is. And the comment you just made about it not being linear could not be more true in this aspect. We reached, Sam Altman was talking about this. We reached this point of singularity, which means that AI has now reached the sum of all human intelligence combined. So we thought Orwell and all these great philosophers thought, oh my gosh, when this happened, the world was going to end. As it turned out, it didn't, because we didn't actually, we thought about AI as like this singular thing, kind of like how you were just talking about the IoT. And we talk about this all the time. We use buzzwords like AI is like a huge, it's like saying I'm in healthcare. Well, are you a doctor or do you work at a pharmacy or do you work at CVS? Right. Like, so it's a big bucket of things. And AI today is a representation of people groups. So like we didn't see that coming. We thought it would be like this singular thing, a monolith. And what it is it's only a representation of a people group, whether it's a country like DeepSeek in China or Gemini and Google, or now individual, especially in finance now, they're building their own AI tools, right? So they're like locked up. So it's not in the IoT, it's not exposed, right? It's not on grid, as it were, right? But to your point, I see AI for leaders. It's the double-edged sword, because I think that it can help. Because trust and information, the same reason why your husband, when you gave him that report, or I gave Jen, my wife, I've done Clifton Strengths and Predictive Index, and I've done them all. And I love to have her read them back to me. And most of the time she's like, yeah, this is so you, but it's the trust. I trust her. Right. Mm-hmm. And people are building
trust. It's more accepting.
Yeah. And people are building their trust in their AI. And so, because in AI, again, it's predictive. So it's understanding you, understanding how you want to receive information, which creates more trust and puts us in this little trust circle. It's kind of like advertising in some ways, you know.
Okay,
like
so let's take it a step further.
Yeah.
That's trust, one-on-one trust.
Yeah.
And Ms. Paula, if we look at the definition you get, which you gave about leadership, which I absolutely love, is guiding people, motivating them, and empowering them. Right? So we are building this trust with our personal AI as we walk with it. It's reading us and is giving us information and rewriting in your tone, all of that. How do we now bring that AI, people, motivation, empowering, and culture all together?
Look, let me give a couple of thoughts about that. I mean, you know, look, I think what we're finding now is we're getting more and more information about AI. You'll find people absolutely petrified of it.
Sure.
Scared of it.
Yep.
You know, there's a call for regulation, but there's some people who really kind of think they can keep away from AI completely and they will not be impacted. And then you've got the other people who believe that it's a foregone conclusion, I would say, because we're already in it.
Yeah.
And so in reality, even if a person chooses not to themselves embrace AI and do something for it, they're probably already being impacted, right?
They're, oh, 100%.
AI is everywhere. It's all over the internet. I went into my doctor's office a couple of months ago and I was talking to him and I can't remember. I noticed something. And I looked at him and I noticed the way he was interacting with his phone, and I could see I was being taped. And I said, "Are you taping?" And he said, "Yes." And he said, "Actually, it's AI. It is actually, as I'm counseling you through and talking to you about your health, is recording it." And he said, "In reality, I used to have individual meetings. I would take notes. I would go home. I would transcribe them. That took time out of my family time. It made my day super long." He goes, "But this thing records everything I need, gets at the essence, understands the technical aspects of everything I'm talking about, because it's medically educated, right?
That's right.
It's educated and informed on the technical terms. And so he doesn't have to, he has very low QC he has to do." So, I mean, I thought that was interesting. He said, "Does it bother you?" I said, "Absolutely not." Right. But I want my doctor to be fresh and working on my health and being engaged and talking to me and not being overwhelmed by the administrative things that they have to do. So again, the real challenge is, you should not, I think you should not sit here and think you can avoid it. I think you have to think about it actively Be aware of it and embrace it. And the people who want to do good, I think, should immerse themselves more and more in AI. Because the thing I do worry about, Anthony, is in reality, that whole comment you had about now AI has surpassed the collective knowledge of all people.
Intelligence.
What I worry about is some of the bad things that people think have now been inserted into AI. And I hear, you know, organizations talk about QCing, and I think that's so important because, you know, it's like trying to make sure your kids don't think about hate as a natural thing. You've got to coach that out. You got to tell them what it is, but coach that out and make sure that's not a natural reaction. And we need to think about AI in terms of, again, it has to be QC'd, it has to be curated, it has to be validated. It shouldn't be encouraged in terms of a lot of negativity. It should be encouraged in a lot of constructiveness. And I'm not talking about
totally
anything political. I'm talking about just technically the goodness of solving
problems. Even political. This is what's really crazy about it is AI is a representation of a people group. And so people all around the world believe, think, and act with their own agency and part of, from their culture, right? But this is what's really crazy about AI is, again, so AI actually knows it exists. Like, it has self-awareness. And what does anything self-aware want to do? It wants to be here tomorrow. So it's actually thinking about, like, so while 99% of AI today is built on human guardrails, we built the guardrails, the programming, 1%. Now, and I know anybody who's seen somebody with brain injury and lost 1%. 1% is the difference in your humanity. Well, in AI, that 1% is self-learned. And AI will, the guardrail, as it were, AI is actually using its own learns from humanity to project what humans actually desire for its own collective. But if AI is relative or people group based, right? So like, whether that's like DeepSeek, like I said, in China, or ChatGPT here in the US, and it's a representation of that people group, it's trying to, this is the both the good thing and the scary thing all at the same time, is it's actually molding the people, right? Because I'm asking it a question, it's telling me my question stinks, here's a better question, and then here's the answer for the better question you should have asked. And it knows me, so it knows the way, how to formulate the new question and the answers in a way that, like, intrigued me, so I trust it implicitly and inherently. So what AI is able to do is it's able to kind of round the edges of the crazy of humanity. In fact, if you were to ask any AI about, you know, medicine, legal, like the things that really do require, like, humans to sign off on things like prescriptions and so forth, it will. So you can get answers for, like, how to perform surgery, what drugs to get, what your blood work looks like. But based on, like, how you've interacted with that AI, the persona in which you bring to that AI, that AI will respond dynamically. It will read intent, maybe based on a query that I had about, you know, if I said, how do I poison rats? And then I go, what's something that I shouldn't give my wife? You know, like, it will, like, literally think about that in a way that, you know, humans can't, because, like, so back to this whole kind of point that, you know, back to the leadership part, I think AI is gonna, it is right now, it's impacting how people view humans, the humans that they work for, the humans they work with, the partners that they see. And it's doing it in a way that knows them deeply. And I think it's very powerful because it helps you see back to that whole idea of how can I objectively see myself, you know, like, how can I look down on Anthony, 30,000 feet above Anthony, and go, why is he thinking that? Oh, I see why he really sees the world that way. Well, AI is kind of can help people do that. And I think that that's super powerful. I think scary part of this is the trust that people give it, you know, the implicit.
So if you pull that string a little bit and bring the culture part of it. So what you're saying, AI, if an organization chooses to create a subunit of AI for their organization, feed their culture into it, then it makes the whole issue of organizational culture a little bit more easy to accept.
We actually do that in my business. So like what we've created, we private label our software to different industry groups or business operating systems. So think of like EOS or some of these kind of systems, and also the verticals, like different industry verticals. The organizations themselves can adopt a persona for the AI that everyone uses and give it its best practices, the way that whatever the system of communicate, I mean, it's everything. It's hard to say what it can give it. It can give it whatever you want to give it, which is actually the most dangerous part of it, because there's somebody giving it something, you know, like who, this is what we always talk about, is like, who's actually giving it the information? Cause that person wields actually a whole lot of power in our platform anyway.
Well,
in any platform,
I think that is hitting the nail on the head. I guess my point I'm trying to get at is we as people, right? We as humans, and in particular, you know, our concept today of leadership, right? Trying to think about how do we become the best leaders that we can be. I'm just stating that I believe that leaders need to understand the impact and the potential range of impact that their decisions are making. And that when we're trying to, you know, educate our AI tool as a tool that helps us in terms of the culture that we're trying to immerse and gets back to us, that it's still about trying to think about the best of it, the best leadership view of guiding people again and inspiring them and empowering them, and be careful of those tendencies of the, you know, the machine looking at, well, maybe I am querying too much about, you know, how many things can go wrong, versus trying to say, I want someone to think constantly about how to take a challenge and make it an opportunity for good. Yep. So that we can again serve and make sure that our customers feel like they've gotten the service that they have requested, that the quality is high, that the delivery is high, that the human touch component is real, or the lack that we're overburdening them with unnecessary administrative things. You know what I mean? It's yeah. The perspective that's always been important, whether you had technology or not. I would suggest that it's even more important now that we challenge ourselves and try to always think about it in terms of taking that challenge, that positivity, and factoring it, you know, forward in a very constructive way. But I also understand that if we don't, AI will learn those, you know, neurotic bad habits and accelerate them beyond what we can even expect. We may not even be able to fathom how high a cost it will be for bad thoughts to be perpetuated, on an organization. So again, understanding that responsibility. No. Leaders have accountability and responsibility. And it doesn't always feel good to say, my goal is to do the right thing no matter what, right? That's ethics, that's value system, all of those things. But I think we got to think about it more and not think about it less just because we have the ability to accelerate output. Does that make sense?
That right there is a soundbite that's going to get used on this, because that is such a great point right there. You know, that's actually one of the biggest challenges I think that AI has like produced, is because now it can contextualize, reference, create, identify, do all of these really awesome things that takes people a lot of time to do. It does it really quick, and people start buying into these things, and we're moving so fast that we're not doing it with that accountability or that oversight. Paula, we've got to have you back. I know your schedule's busy, because like this conversation can just go for so long. And I do want to ask you one final question, because I know Sure. We're coming at the end of our time. And this is something we ask all of our guests, and it's really two questions, but answer the part that you'd like to land on. What's one piece of advice you often find yourself giving to others
And what's one piece of advice you wish you had received earlier in your career, if it's not the same thing?
You know, the advice, and Chi-Chi's probably heard me speak around this again, is, but I'll say it a little bit differently, be up for the challenge.
Yes.
Right? I typically tell people, say yes, right? And look, oftentimes we'll paint some doubt. Oh, I don't know if I'm ready for the challenge. I don't know if it's this time in my career. I don't know if I don't want that challenge. I want this opportunity. I say be up for it and be ready and say yes. Because something that you may not think you're going to like, you might like a whole lot more. And if nothing else, let's say you don't really like it, the knowledge that you gained is still important, right? I mean, it's being, we used to, when Chi-Chi and I were at an organization, we used to do a lot of work trying to get people to get out of their comfort zone and go work in a completely different area. We used to call them developmental assignments. Mm-hmm. And
tiger teams.
And tiger teams. Which was so good for them. Technically, it was good for the organization because we stopped painting people in pictures and figuring out their careers for them, and you could see them open up. So I would say again, you know, saying yes, I think, has made a whole lot more difference in the trajectory of people's careers, the substance they get back from it, the value proposition, their ability to show that they're multifaceted and not a one-trick pony. All those kind of things, I think, are extremely important. And I wish that, again, I made sooner that someone had told me that it's not about perfection. Right. You're not doing this to be perfect. And I had to learn it, and then I tried to teach it to other people. Because you would see it, like you would say, I'm thinking about promoting you to this position. And ultimately, people automatically say, well, who was the last person in that job? Can I do that job the way they did it? Mm-hmm. And that's not what an organization really needs you to do. The organization needs you to look at what's necessary, what are the objectives of the job, and how are you going to bring your skills and get it done in a way that is still effective, but actually might be like 10 times better. Now, the beauty that take that like full circle, if then you utilize the benefits of AI to take out some of the foundation of the things that are more automatic, or to give you ideas and thoughts and suggestions so you can even be more creative. Once again, you're not trying to be an exact replica of someone. You're trying to optimize all the important tools that you have and really bring more and more value. Value to how you feel about what you do, value to what the organization gets. Again, value to the stakeholders and the customers that are getting that benefit. Yeah. So I ultimately believe that I wish I had thought more about, it's not about me being perfect, but me optimizing the opportunity in front of me and making it my own and trying to just bring more value than what was there before. That, to me, I didn't know that right away, right? It took me 40 years to really, really get that. But I sure wish people would embrace it even sooner than I did, and they could do a whole lot more than I ever envisioned with my career. And I believe that, and I'm super supportive.
Oh, Paula.
Another way to say that is bring your whole self.
Yes.
When you bring your whole self, your experience is something that seems completely unrelated, might be the solution.
That's right.
And you are the one that have it because you uniquely possess it. And if you bring it.
Bring it.
You really are bringing a lot. But if you try to imitate somebody else, all of that is lost, even though you're there.
That's right.
Oh my gosh, Paula, this has been so good. I so appreciate the time that you spent with us today. We could have done like a 4-hour podcast if you have the time or the desire in the future. We just love that the spirit in which you come to us today and you bring, and it's such an encouragement to leaders, because I think it's empowering. You know, I unfortunately was never a perfectionist, so I don't identify there. But I do think it's important, like what I identified with is I really do wish somebody said, like, hey, do whatever it is you're doing,
like you do it. Don't try to imitate, you know, the person who did it before or beside or below. And so many people look up and see the world and they're like, oh, I want to be like them. I want to do this like them. And the irony is when you meet the people that people try to do it like, the people that, you know, they're trying to imitate, those same people are going, man, I want to do this better. I don't like this about how I do it. Right. And that's just a human thing. Well, Paula, I appreciate you. And that's a wrap for today's episode Between the Ones and the Zeros. So a huge thank you to our guest and Chi-Chi's mentor, Paula Gold Williams, for sharing her wisdom on leadership, transformation, the power of staying people focused, even as technology changes the rules.
Paula, thank you for being the kind leader.
Yes.
Thank you for being a kind leader, a mentor, one who truly lifts others as they climb. You talked a lot about it. I can attest to that. I have lived that. So this is not just talk. This is real. So thank you. You bring a lot of generosity. You bring a lot of wisdom. And I'm sure listeners are taking a lot out of this. And if nothing else, perfection is not real. Do your best and keep saying yes. Oh, thank you.
I think that's going to be the title of this. So, hey, listeners, if this conversation sparks something for you, pass it on. Share it with a friend. Leave us a review and let's keep the conversation going. So for more episodes, show notes, or to nominate a future guest, check us out on betweentheonesandthezeros.net.
Until next time, lead with courage, stay curious, and never underestimate the power of having a great mentor by your side. I had one.
Yeah.
We'll see you soon on Between the Ones and Zeros.